You're listening to After Images, a podcast for cinephiles that takes a deep dive into moving images. Each episode features a special guest who is invited to explore a film of their choice. After Images is hosted by film writers Franck Bouleg and Marisa C. Hayes. For today's episode of After Images, we are pleased to welcome author Joanna Gustafsson in a discussion of Pedro Almodovar's High Heels. High Heels is Pedro Almodovar's ninth feature-length film, released in 1991. Merging aspects of diverse genres, including the melodrama, thriller, and musical, the film follows the complex relationship between Becky, a celebrated singer, played by Marisa Paredes, and her newscaster daughter, Rebecca, played by Victoria Abril. Returning to Madrid after a 15-year estrangement from her daughter, who has since married her mother's ex-lover, Manuel, the pair spend an evening at a nightclub to watch a drag performer, Miguel Bosé, impersonate Becky. Meanwhile, Manuel is found dead at home, and a quest to find the murderer begins. The mother-daughter relationship remains a focal point in a film full of twists, colors, and song.
A French author with Catalan heritage, Joanna Gustafsson holds a degree in political science and is fascinated by history. She has been a journalist for both French and Spanish press, as well as television. Her trilogy, Roy and Castells, The Bleeding, and Euler Island, currently being adapted for television, have been translated in over 20 countries. Joanna lives in the inner Stockholm archipelago with her husband and three sons.
Welcome, Joanna Gustafsson, to this episode of After Images podcast. We're delighted to have you with us. You have been called the Queen of French Noir, and we're delighted to have such a talented writer with us tonight to discuss Pedro Almodovar's High Heels. We always begin this podcast by asking our guest, why did you choose this film? What does it mean to you?
Well, this movie means it's a movie about mother and daughter relationship. And I have a very strong bond and relationship with my mother. My relationship is very, I would say, balanced and loving. It's absolutely not like in the family. But as we've been, so I'm from Marseille. I was born in Marseille, but my grandfather, my maternal grandfather, was born in Barcelona. So in my family, I have a part of my family who is living in near Valencia in a very small town called El Palomar. And my granddad and my mother always cultivated that part of my heritage. So I'm fluent in Spanish, was going to see my family in Spain. And my mother is a huge fan of Almodovar. So very early on, because my parents, I mean, we have lots of psychologists in the family, and my parents wanted to introduce me to whatever they like. They always answered with a lot of intellectual honesty, I would say. So one day I saw my mother having, she was watching, so Tacones Lejano, Lejanos, High Heels, and it was a scene where Victoria Abril is in front of the camera and she's talking. I mean, she's basically saying that she killed her husband. And she's a news anchor. And I got mesmerized by that lady. And I was young. I don't know. I must have been maybe the age of my oldest, 9 or 10. And I said, Mom, is that, because I understood the Spanish. I said, is that happening for real now? Mm-hmm. And she was like, no, it's a movie. So then I developed a love for Victoria Abril, and my mother told me that the big genius behind this is Almodovar. And I was a bit too young at the time because the movies are very sexualized and a lot of themes which are very hard to grasp. And we waited a few years, and then that is the first one that she showed me. Mm-hmm. The movie Tacones Lejanos, and there are so many themes at the time I must have been 16 or something, and I loved Miguel Bosé, who is a singer within the movie. So for me, it was the first time that I really it was like diving into Almodovar and understand all his genius, and finding out that in Spain he was a bit criticized, you know, not as much loved as is in France or in the States. And so that was the reason I would say that it was my mother, as much as she, I mean, she was the one who gave me the, how do you say, the love for reading, and she's the one who passed on her love for Almodovar. So, yeah.
It's so interesting that you mention being able to understand the film in Spanish too. Mm-hmm. That brings us right away to the title, which I think is unfortunate in both French and English, because they really allude to other symbols that are very strong, whereas, of course, is about distant heels. And this is so important. We know, I don't want to spoil it for anyone, but it's a very important scene towards the end of the film. And I think it conjures up so many more sensorial qualities. And I'm wondering, now that you've had a very international life, how has your relationship to the film changed in terms of who you've seen it with, how they were interpreting it, and even approaching these different titles, which I know is a topic for you too, because your books have been translated into other languages. So that must be something that you think about.
Well, it's really interesting what you're mentioning this, because, you know, when I start a friendship or love relationship, I give to my friend or to my lover or loved, how do you say, interest, two things. And normally is Cyrano de Bergerac, which I give, and I say, you need to give it a try. And as a translation, which is sometimes you really need to pick, and I give Tacones Lejanos. And what happened is that years back when I was researching about, because Almodovar always said that his movies dubbed do not work, and the worst is always in German. And he explained that basically is the movement of the lips and the way that Germans are, that doesn't work at all with these movies. And he said in interviews, they always start with why. And he said, my movies are not about why, they're about feeling, letting. And it's really, that's the first thing about that movie that I thought was so sad, and is the case with translation with books. How many times I have my translators telling me, but, oh man, how am I going to translate this? We cannot translate that image. We don't have that expression, and that is the same here. I mean, with Lejanos, which is, there's so much about the relationship, about the mother and the daughter, because it's all about this. And that's what I love about Almodovar as well, is the fact that he's looking at relationships like a psychologist, but without judging, never judges. And what I loved in what he's doing, that he was a way for me to introduce my friends or boyfriends to what my family was. It was to give them a taste of that craziness that we have in, you know, in Spain, you speak loud, and it's a funny thing about the fact that I married a Swede, because you see, sort of, you cannot get more opposites basically than what we are. You have the fire and the ice, and it really is like that. His family, for example, they don't, if there is a problem, that will be very calmly addressed or not addressed at all, put underneath the carpet. And for us, we said, okay, what's wrong? And we shout over that, and then we hug and we fight. And so for me, it was really a way, that movie, to say, this is what my family is. You know, we may shout a lot, but we love each other. And I think that's what it is, in because all of Almodovar movies are dealing with Jeanette's love. In very destructive, toxic, lethal, but it's all about love, and indeed that I mean, about language and translation, and but what I'm amazed about his art is that it's very, I mean, it's like seeing a Rothko. It's very hard to when you do not know his universe, to say, oh, I love this movie, and yet is really, really loved and understood and respected. So in a way, his language translates very well, despite the fact that some people might just grasp I mean, an infinite part. For example, in the States, I think that they presented high heels like a melodrama, and I was like, oh my God, so much more than this. So much more. I mean, yes, I find that very, very interesting. And sad at the same time. It's always the same, you know, when you translate a poem and you don't get everything that the poet has put in, all the alliterations and the images that it's bringing. And
I find that very interesting what you're saying about the Latin aspect of Almodovar. I mean, he's very loud when it comes to the sound. He's very loud when it comes to the colors themselves. I mean, the colors are really, really strong. But at the same time, if you think of High Heels, the film deals with blind spots, with things that are not said, which I think is also interesting because it connects to your books. I have found that this is a device that you use regularly in your fiction. This idea that elements of the psyche of the characters are not revealed either to themselves or to us, the readers, until the moment when you choose to reveal them, to create a twist situation. And this is something I find very strongly in High Heels too. I don't know if you want to react to this.
Oh, yes, completely. It speaks to me a lot because I think that Almodovar had this way of presenting in his characters, and even more in High Heels, when it's like peeling an onion. So when you see the character of the mother interpreted by Marisa Paredes, you just cannot stand that woman. You're like, what an awful. You can admire her, but you say, my God, she's been the worst mother ever. And you see that daughter's been trying to the point that she basically married her mother's lover. In a way, like what you couldn't have, I have it. I married him. It's been mine. I mean, it's, when you come back to, I mean, it's like coming back to basically the origin. You know, I mean, it's voracious in a way that is, but he built his characters in that movie the way that the viewer is discovering more and more layers, and that is with the character of the judge and the travestite. It's quite literally like that. It's peeling off his. I mean, it's in an amazing way. And what I found out about Almodovar, and I thought, oh, so interesting, is that he is a director who does the how do you say montage? Is the set
editing.
No, is the editing? Yes, he does the editing as he goes along with the movie, and that I find that absolutely amazing. And it makes so much sense to me. This is how I write. I need to know where I'm heading. Mm-hmm. And when he explains this, he says, well, I cannot wait till the end of the movie because I need to know if I grasp the right emotion there. And that's why when he shoots, normally you see him, he shoots it from the different, from all the different characters' perspective, which I found that amazing. And so, I dare to say that I have something in common with Almodovar, but this is something that I understand in his art so well. And I think that in High Heels, it's really like this. And what I love in the end, and this is when you do some acting and you use the Stanislavski's method, they tell you never judge your character. And in the end, because all of them, I mean, in a way, have a motive, a reason why they did this. Which is a way that I raise my children as well. Then I say, when someone is angry, it's because he's sad. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and this is the same way for that mother. When you look slowly by slowly that character, Marisa Paredes, or even Victoria Abril, you get to understand them more and more. And then there is a sort of empathy that you develop till the end when there is that finale and that you get to love Marisa Paredes. So, Yes, it's really something that I love, and I think that in all his movies he has this way of really peeling off part of the skin. And there is this other movie which is quite literally in English, I think it was The Skin I Live In, which is one of the more recent ones, La Piel Que Habito, which is literally another, I mean, a skin that we're living in, which I thought was absolutely brilliant as well. So, yes.
And thinking here about this mother-daughter relationship and having read La Folie or I'm thinking very much about flawed mother-daughter relationships and sort of understanding what drives a mother or a daughter to take very drastic measures that might be hidden, that might appear very ugly to someone else, but in the name of love, and this love that you spoke about in regards to the film, that's really underlying everything and these very strange psychological choices that have been made. Did you think about this film when you were writing The Bleeding?
I didn't think about the film, but I think about that film. But I think Almodovar's art has always been part of my life. I mean, I remember, God, that was, I don't know how many years ago, but there was Le Monde who had put, it was not Le Monde, it was El País, who had put a collection that you could get all the Almodovar movies that I had already in VHS, but you could get the DVD. And I took, I remember the time I was a student, it was so expensive. I took a subscription to El País, so the Spanish newspaper, to get the DVDs that were sent to my aunt in Spain. That was, I mean, I was totally obsessed. I was feeling that there was a, I mean, it's funny because I have that book, which I absolutely love, which I dove into again, which is and for one of my birthday, I had three of my friends coming with that book that has just been out. So it was really, it's really, I think, something that is part of my culture, is part of me. It can happen very often that I have a scene that will come to me when I need to express something. And but it's funny because what I'm writing is a lot about toxic mothers. I think it's an obsession which is mine, because it's a fear which is mine. I mean, I'm a mother of boys, and my worry, I guess, is to raise, to be toxic to my boys. And so that's why, in a cathartic way, I put it into my books, and again and again and again. And I think that Almodovar has this obsession about the toxicity that love has. Because the way that we love how we can love, we very often don't love the way we would like to love, but it's very hard to, I mean, we are the produce of our past and of our education, environment and mistakes. And so it's a very complex machinery. And then suddenly you need to give love and you don't, it's really, that's why love is the book and songs and every art, because we do not understand it. We do not grasp it. And when I was reading, it was last night, I was reading some parts of the book, because I couldn't dive or immerse myself into it for quite a while. And I was thinking, God, without knowing, unknowingly, there's been so many parallels in what I'm writing and in Almodovar. And I had not realized it until last night. So I think it was really seeping through, you know, sort of primary education that my mother gave me without wanting to give it to me. And really, yeah, and we share that. And of course, in you have as well the music in High Heels, which is that is a music that I keep on listening. Kienz and Me, and the other one, I forgot the title of the other one, but there are two songs, but Kienz and Me, which was not known at the time of the when Almodovar did the movie, Pienso en Mí was a Mexican song, really known in Mexico, but not in Spain. But it became, I mean, very famous. And I know that I mean, at the time, I had bought the CD of the original soundtrack and the version I've heard it thousands of times. And every time gives me goosebumps and I have to close my eyes. And that's the memory that I had last night. And I'm just telling you, and I still have the goosebumps when I watched this movie, and I didn't go to the movies to watch it. It was at home the first time that I discovered that movie. And when she started singing Piensa en Mí, I was in front of my TV, but I closed my eyes to listen to her. And I thought that was so beautiful. Yes, so yes, and the music in Almodovar movies is a really important part of, because it's also it carries the culture in the movie, or the Spanish culture or the Latin culture, but it explains some sort of the, I forgot the title of that movie where you have Penelope Cruz who is singing so beautifully with that passion that, oh God, this the title of this one. But she is singing, and she, like, you know, when you have the when you listen to what is called, you have some Spanish singers which are accompanied by very often dancers, and when you are in the flamenco scene, you see how the dancers close their eyes when they dance, which you see nowhere else. And so yes.
It's interesting that you're mentioning the music and the fact that it's coming from Mexico, because I was thinking that there might also be something there about the mother-daughter relationship between Spain and Mexico. That might have been something that might have motivated Almodovar's choice to have this link between the mother going to Mexico and back.
Yes, I was wondering, and I didn't know that, because I mean, I never looked for that. I didn't know, because I know that he chose the song because he loved it. That was it, and he was looking for a song, and that because I was really surprised when that song came up. I said, with all the singers in Spain, why that song? And at the time, I remember him saying, because I loved it, just because I loved it. And I know that he worked a lot on the versions that he needed to have of the song. But then that might be the reason why the mother was in Mexico and she's coming back to be in Madrid, for reasons that we're not going to. But
And I was reading that some of the Miles Davis that was used in the film was actually based on flamenco structure. So there does seem to be something about voyages and returning to the source.
Yes, and I really think that for Almodovar, and that's what I really, really love, and for me is, I've been an expat now for half my life. And when I met my husband, who had been an expat at that time, is for 12 years, I think, he had been living in London. And I was mocking him, telling him, oh, because he was going to a Swedish shop to buy some delicacies. And he told me, you will see when you will have been far away from home for as long as me, you will try to go and find your baguette everywhere. And it's so true. And for me, it's the same with the Spanish culture, because I always say that my heart is Spanish, because when I'm in Spain, I feel I'm at home. It's the noise, it's the smile, it smells, it's everything. And that's why I appreciate more and more the way that Almodovar honors his culture. And he's coming back to it, and he can criticize it, but he loves it, and he's passionate about it, and he comes back to it, and absolutely loves this. And I think it's, and he's a man who works with his family, I mean, El Deseo is a company, and I think it's with his brother Agusti, I think, and it I think it's just because it's funny when you think of Miles Davis, you're thinking, wow, it just chose something else, but no, he chose something that is coming back home, and what I thought was very interesting, and at the time it was is that there is a parallel that he did on purpose in this movie, and which is with Bergman, which I thought was at the time for me Bergman. I mean, when that movie was, it was very long movies, and my parents were sitting me in front of to say, "You need to have a look at this. This is one of the greats." I was like in front of Fanny Alexander. I was like, "I'm gonna die now." You know, it was way too long, and I got to understand his movies much later. But is that parallel that he's doing with in English is what Autumn Sonata probably, which is. My mother said that he was an inspiration as a toxic relationship between a mother and her daughter, and the daughter that never manages to be as good as the mother, that wonderful pianist. And Victoria Abril, in that scene, which was shot in a very special way, because there is a scene when she has that monologue that finally she explains herself to the mother. Something that she must have had in her all her life, almost all her adult life. And Almodovar explained, because that monologue was so powerful that I was thinking, oh my God, how many takes? And what happened was that he had told Victoria Abril, I'm not so sure it's going to work, because or it's going to be super boring because it's a long monologue, or we're just gonna smash it. He had no idea. He didn't know. And he just let her do and be. And that monologue is that you it's almost like you want more. You're with her all the time. And at the start of this monologue, she says, it's like in Autumn Sonata. You know, there's a story of that mother. So it really, really put in Bergman there. And it was funny to revisit this with the fact that I'm married to a Swede, that Swedish culture is a very strong culture. This is culture that people carry with them, like a little bit like the Latin, except that they're just 10 million, but you feel that they're 50 because they celebrate absolutely. They have lots of pagan celebrations. So, I thought that that was a very, very interesting. Yes, very interesting. Always that thing that fascinates me is that we always look up to the masters, you know. I mean, I remember when I was living in London and I had to start writing a new book. I don't remember which one was it. There's always that fear. And I went to see an exhibition at the Tate, and it was Turner and the Masters. And I saw that exhibition looking, I was like, wow, he just copied all the Masters. And then he found himself. And he made me so much more at ease, you know, reading a Christie or whatever, you know, master you would find that would be your Masters, and then taking some inspiration. And that's what Almodovar did with Bergman in his way, and putting it out there for people not to say, you copied it, you didn't want anyone to know, and stayed it in there so that everyone knows. Yeah.
The fact that Almodovar is so recognizably Spanish, I think, is really obvious when you watch his films. I mean, it is very, very present, omnipresent. But at the same time, as you noticed earlier, he has been liked to a greater extent in France and other countries than in Spain itself. And I wanted to put this in relationship with what you said concerning the fact that you've been basically an expat for half your life. Would you say that perhaps Almodovar is some sort of expat in his own country?
I really think so. You know, I really think so, because It was, again, it was years back, and I don't even remember which country I was living in. I don't know if it was an exhibition in Paris. I think it was in Paris. And I remember seeing that exhibition because everything was Almodovar. You know, it was my mom. We were going. And I remember in that exhibition when he was saying that thing, no one is prophet in his own country, right? And I remember being so shocked, thinking, really, him in Spain? I mean, he's taking Spanish colors everywhere. Mm-hmm. Very few people, when you look at the country. I mean, of course, you have painters like Dalí and Miró, and okay. But in terms of cinema, I mean, he's liked by very different, how would I put it, journalists, critics. I mean, it's very broad. And I was thinking, and not in Spain. And when you look at it, you know, here we have I mean, in Sweden, there is a writer called Camilla Läckberg. Mm-hmm. And she is liked everywhere. She has received prizes in France, in here. You know, the first thing when I met my mother-in-law, and I was a journalist at the time, she told me, oh, don't tell me that you're reading Camilla Läckberg. I was like, yeah, I love her. And I tell her she must be well-translated because it's really bad. And I was thinking, well-translated, not well-translated. The stories are good. The characters are great. I mean, I'm a big reader. If I like her, that there's something good, you know, in her. And I think she's been complaining about that a lot, Camilla Läckberg, saying, how come? I mean, she's selling millions. And she said, how come in my country she is criticized every step she takes, criticized for marriages, for prose, I mean, for everything. And I'm thinking it's a sad thing because I think, you know, when you want to be prophet in your own country. Yeah. I know that for me, I'm living away from home, but I'm so happy that I'm known and appreciated in my own country. And it must be tough. And I'm wondering if that is not the reason why, in the end, I mean, Almodovar keeps on bringing the Spanish colors, thinking that subconsciously, of course, but maybe that at some point it will be loved and noticed the way that is noticed abroad. Mm-hmm. And is working. So the funny thing is that you can have the actresses, which are celebrated, who are celebrated, but not really his movie. So they can say, "Oh, Penelope Cruz was so good," but not about movie was. And so yes, and it's a sad thing, and I think it's a sad thing.
Yeah. And why do you think that is? Why do you think? There is this dislike, I mean, I wouldn't say dislike, but perhaps a lack of for
his... Wow. I think it's because he's handing a mirror, you know, and it's painful to look at yourself in the mirror. And what he does is that he takes some very, it's not satirical and it's not... it's not caricature either, but sometimes when you know, it's a little bit like when you see that Christmas photo that you say, oh my god, I look so, I don't know, I look so skinny, I look so fat, I look so red, I look so, and like, did I really look like this? I mean, and I think it's the same thing. Mm-hmm. I think that Spanish are looking at them and say, oh, come on, we're not like this. We don't shout. We don't have those toxic relationship. What does he say? And I think that it's not a flattering picture, mm-hmm. that is painting. And I think that might be the problem. You need to have that sense of humor with yourself. How you say depreciative, I think, how you call that, yeah? When you make fun of yourself, and Spanish are not like that. Mm. I mean, Scandis are, Brits are, but not Spaniards or Spanish people. So maybe that's the reason why. I don't know, but they were not all Spanish people, thank God. but they're definitely missing out.
Yeah. And it's tough to be at the vanguard, isn't it? I mean, when we think about this artistic movement that he was really leading towards the end of the final years of Franco, and thinking about the changes in society. And I think by today's standards, it's incredible to look at queer culture as it's represented in Almodovar and see how, you know, it would not be out of place today. Like, we are finally catching up today to what Almodovar was doing in the 1980s.
But that's what is incredible, because when you look at Spanish history and you know that Franco died in the mid-70s, but his heritage went on and on and on. I mean, the stolen babies, it was up to the 90s, end of 80s. And if you talk to some parents of my girlfriends, they can tell you, but Franco, it was great. There was order in the country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, meaning one of my book, Blood Song in English, A Song in French, it's about Franco. Mm-hmm. And about what happened in the orphanages and with the church and all the abusive and you realize that by, you know, putting a sort of creating that agreement, shaking hands, the silence law, saying, well, we pretend nothing has happened. You know, there was a sort of Spain never moved. There was no forgiveness because there was no fault, and in the middle and of this, you see Almodovar, who dared to do what he did, and when indeed you look at it now and some of the movies of that time, you're like, whoa! At the time when the kids' mouth were, you know, washed, if they were speaking Catalan or something like that still.
Mm.
He was talking about the queer culture that way, about love, about parents, about what it meant to be in a family that was too severe or too open or too... and giving power to women.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Because all his movies are about women and women issues, where women, we're trying to find our voice, and now we shut up a little bit more, you know, left and right. In the States more than anything, but in Poland, I mean, in the rights which are taken away. So I think, indeed, I mean, when you look at it, you're thinking it requires so much courage, so much. It was very visionary, but I think courage in a, because Spain, I mean, was full Franquist people who were supporting Franco even when Franco was dead. I mean, they continued flourishing, so, and being there, and they're still there. So it's and of course for Franco the symbol was a family, Christian family. So there was no space and no space to be made for anything than the heterosexual model. So yes.
And so much was with Franco and basically all the movements that follow the same direction as his. There's this idea of purity. I think that Almodovar is the total opposite of the notion of purity. It's all about blending, about genres mixing, crisscrossing identities, colors. It's all about avoiding this idea of uniformity, isn't it?
Completely. And I think for him, he was, he's homosexual. And I think that even if he was accepted and in his family, but at the time when he was, where he was living, you have to defend your sexuality and your identity. So I think that... for me, all the colors in Almodovar movies were like, it's passion, of course, but it's like a scream and you see it. It's like shouting. I mean, it's in High Heels, the title comes to me in Spanish every time. In High Heels, you see Marisa Paredes, the mother, she's in red and she's vibrant, and she's with that those red lips and the and that blonde hair, and the and she almost looks herself like a travestite. And I remember the first time I saw the movie, I asked my mom, I said, "Is she a man, mom? I mean, is she?" I don't. And I think he's playing on that a lot. And I think that is it's really. I think when we create, what we want is to establish a certain truth. I think we talk about our fears a lot. It's very cathartic to create. So or we go away from our fears or we dive into it. And very often there is a message that you just want to pass on. And I think Almodovar is obsessed with that, giving a voice to the ones who don't have a voice. And it has been like that from the start of his movies. And I mean, Kika and all this, you have some movies, you're like, whoa. But it's, you really, when you put them indeed back, you know, to the moment when they were created, you're like, I'm amazed that it was not forbidden at the time, or that people even gave good reviews or dared to see. I mean, and he always had that incredible federative power, Almodovar, which is almost strange in a way. And I remember for me, I mean, it's a question that I asked myself at the start when I was, because every time that I'm asked, I have many that I like about Almodovar, but I always come back to Almodovar, and it's almost like he doesn't really fit in my taste, you know? It's a bit, I'm much more traditional for so many things, but yet Almodovar speaks to me so much. And I know that if there is a movie, it's the movie I won't miss, and it's a movie that I will watch and watch and watch to see all the different layers, because that time I will listen to the music and I will look at that character, and then I will look at the other character, and then, because what is very interesting about Almodovar is that he's an amazing actor. He hates seeing himself. That's why it's very hard to see him act. But what he does is that he shows his actors how he wants the scene, how he sees it when he wrote the movie and when he wrote the script and the movie, because it's a universe. I mean, for High Heels, he even wrote some monologues of the mother and daughter for Marisa Paredes and Victoria Abril, just for them to understand the characters, monologues which don't appear in the movie. So he's, I think, what I love about him as well, and that is something that I always admire and that makes me feel less lonely, is hardworking people. And when my kids tell me, "What do you believe in?" I said, "A hard work." You know, I don't believe in God. I believe in hard work so much. I think that when you work hard, you can get anywhere you want and do anything you want. I really believe in this. And Almodovar, he has that obsession of the detail. And in his movies, you can watch a scene and watch it again, and then you're going to see that detail. And that, I don't know, vase that will be placed at that spot, because he's going to create a sort of light in that scene, which is all about, is all red. I mean, everything has a sort of purpose. And that's what I really, really love about his art.
And I'm thinking here about this ensemble of regular actors with whom, but in particular the women, and you mentioned these incredible female characters that he creates, these really complex, wonderfully varied characters. And even though they're playing different people in every film, I imagine that there must be something about them that he looks to recreate every time that he works with them, some sort of shared work ethic, some sort of presence that he really appreciates. And I'm just wondering what you think about this notion of finding again, coming again upon these same actors, and also how that might compare to the writing process when you decide whether or not to return to certain characters. For example, if you're working on a trilogy and you decide who to come back to, how do you relate to this regularity of recurring characters or figures?
Well, I think that for him, what's happening more than anything is I think that it's like a muse. So I think it works like this. I mean, now it's clearly, I mean, Penelope Cruz, who has been his muse for quite a while. And I think that what he sees in her is all the women she is at the same time. And I think when it was for Victoria Abril as well, was done a few movies with him. And I think that clearly you were talking about work ethic, and that for sure. Because when you have a man with such, I mean, he's very precise in what he asks about the actors, precise, is hardworking, is going to ask again and again and again to do the same scene. I mean, imagine someone who does the editing as he goes on, meaning that he shoots during the day. Then when everyone is going to rest, he's going to do the editing, sleeps very little, go back and go. I mean, you have to admire, the passion, I think. And so I think there is that for sure. And I think that, yes, what he sees, and that is something for me that I see clearly in Victoria Abril and Penelope Cruz, is all the women they can be. First of all, they're great actresses. So they can embody so much. But what is interesting is that there are actresses that you can see as much as mothers. You know, is the mother's a saint and the whore. You know, it's what it represents. And I think they can be each one of them completely. And I think that's what he sees, because he's looking at all the caricatures of the women that are represented in, well, in the art everywhere, in but how do you say that? Il est sublime. He makes it sublime in a way. He creates a path that is so much more refined, so much more precise than what we can see, all the caricatures. And I think that's why he goes back to those women, to the women to the actresses that he loves. And I think I was intrigued for High Heels about the choice of Miguel Bosé. Because Miguel Bosé, who is having a very important role, two characters at the same time, and he was a singer at the time, more than anything. He was, I think he has some Italian origins as well, Miguel Bosé. And he was really, I was like, for that role, I was like, that is so strange, and yet it's perfect in the role. I absolutely love it. And he's many, many men in that role. And when he was questioned Almodovar about that, and he said, because there were not many men that could be many men and meet characters. And him, when he did the casting, straight away, he could see him. And I think he's looking, Almodovar, at that diversity of identities in people. And that's probably why. And I mean, it's been, when you see all the actresses that he had, you don't have necessarily pure beauty. You have those women who are so interesting in their physicality more than anything. I mean, you have so many different women, even Marisa Paredes, who is very special features, very masculine and yet very feminine at the same time. So yeah, that might be why. And for me, as I write, it's that writing a series, there is that joy of going back to people you love, because this is what it is. And I think in a movie, Almodovar, I'm sure that you take away a little bit of that part of unknown, and you say, oh, thank God, I'm going to do that with Victoria. I'm going to do that with Penelope. I know that I'm stressed because of the movie, but that will be handled well by her. And I think that's what you have in a series. You're like, okay, I don't need to create a new character because the character is already there. She has a story, And at the same time, for me, when I changed publishers a few years back and published with a French publisher, WASCMI, to do standalones now. This is how they want it. So I'm doing standalones because there is the law of the market, obviously. So I'm doing standalone. And there is that really excitement of being able to do tabula rasa. And I do whatever I want. And that it's amazing. So, of course, I'm not working with people like I do. I'm working with desire of people because my publisher is going to, oh, that works so well. Please do something else. But and what is really funny in terms of market is that my publisher in the UK and the US, they want a series. And there is my all the main territories. So I'm like, oh my God, whatever. And so what we did now, which was really funny, is for my latest book called Yule Island in the UK and US. Wow. My publisher, yes, exactly this one. So my publisher, I have it in English. I'm going to show it just for you because I need to send it to a reader. It's very nice in English.
Oh, beautiful.
Oh, they did an amazing edition, a special edition. And my publisher told me, I want a series. And I said, you know what? I have an idea so that everyone's going to be happy. I'm going to say that it's called the Lidingö series. Lidingö is the island where everything happens. So I said, it's going to be a unity of place. People's going to change, but we are in the Stockholm archipelago. Yes, so that's what I did. But I think that Almodovar has this, it's not a luck because he created his luck. But what he does is that he does the movies he wants to do. He had the courage at the start, and now he had this luxury of saying, I do the movie I want to make and talk about the subject I want to talk about because he knows he will have the support to do so. So I think that... He has a cocoon of working with certain people that he enjoys working with. And that must be, that is a funny thing when you write because you don't have any muse. You don't. I don't. I have inspiration, of course, that you take from, you don't even know where. I mean, it's everything that you feed yourself with. And inspiration is a weird, weird animal. Because I know for the past months now, my children have been three small children sick one after the other. And I'm very late to write my book. And I'm doing some research and I was reading a book, which is very grim. It's about rape. It's terrible. It's testimony is about rape. Very grim. And I was at the hospital reading what we were waiting. And suddenly I was reading that very grim book. And I had an idea for two twists for my book. And I was like, I was sleepless. Tired in a hospital. Like, why on earth? How did that come? It's almost worrying, you know. How come? And yet it comes, and I think that that is the beauty of it. Though, if we would know how it works, it would be less fun. But yes. Yes, I'm wondering if one day I will be in a place where I will be. I think you need to have the courage, like Almodovar, to talk about what you want to talk about. Because I think he always had that courage at the start for the reason that we mentioned earlier. But also now, because I'm sure that some producers could say, oh, do some pure Almodovar there. And he's going to say, no, I decide to talk about this and that, because these movies are never the same. You cannot say that there is, you see by the color, by the subject, the themes, but the stories, the characters. I mean, you cannot say that you have the feeling that you're seeing a series or absolutely not. There is like a really, I mean, when you, what is the title in English? Able con ella. Parle avec elle. How is this one?
Talk to her.
No. This one is. mean, when you compare it to high heels, you feel like, oh, the skin I live in, all this, it's somehow weirder than I remember at the time. The skin I live in, I had taken a friend of mine. I was like, what is that weird thing? That weird shit. For me, then you took it. I was like, what is that? And me, I was mesmerized, you know. I was like, oh my God, all the symbolism that I was seeing. It was, oh, I still remember some scenes. And that's the thing with Almodovar. For me, it stays with me. It's like a tattoo in my mind. It speaks to me in a very deep way, deep, deep way. And I remember, God, that was, that was more than 2 decades ago. And at that time, I was a journalist, but one of my dreams was to become an actress. And I was on stage in Paris, and I was going to see my boyfriend. I had a Spanish boyfriend. And on my way back of seeing him flying from Madrid to Paris, who was on the plane? Almodovar. And I saw him passing, and I was like, no, I cannot believe the only person on earth that I admire, because really I was not a fan at all for anything. But to him, I was thinking, oh my God. And I wanted to pass on a little note to tell him that I thought he was absolutely wonderful. And I had no paper with me. I had nothing. You know, I had books. I didn't have notebooks. And he was sitting in business, of course, and I was in cattle class. And the air stewardess passed by, and I said, listen, I'm sure that the whole plane is telling you the same thing, but can you just pass on to him that note? I don't want anything. And the only paper that I had found was not a paper. It was a picture of my grandfather and I that I always had with me. So I wrote on the back of that picture, which I lost, but for me it's not lost. Yeah. It's been with him. Grandfather, who was still alive at the time, and I just wrote in Spanish in the back that I just want him to continue to inspire me this much, you know. And on the way back, when we exited the plane, he waited and he said in Spanish, "Thank you so much. You sure you want to give me that picture?" And I said, "Yes, I want you to have that picture." And he was really sweet, and I remember that moment. Because he was shorter than I thought he would be. Things like this, you always have. But he had that big smile. That I loved. And that I thought there is some, because not for one second I thought he can be an ass, because he could have been. I've met, you know, as a journalist, as I was speaking many languages, I did so many interviews and trust me, there's some people who look wonderful and they're just absolutely, absolutely, horrible. And he was not one of those. He was genuine, and that was really nice, because if not, I was thinking I want my picture back. I would have continued loving his movies, because for me, I mean, the persona and the artist, I mean, the persona and the person are two different things. But yes, I think yes.
I wanted to come back to what you talked about concerning the fact that the same actor can play several characters, this notion of being one and several at the same time. Thinking about your books and about his films, because in your books, I find that they are described very often as thrillers, but they are much more than thrillers. And I think there's also an element of horror. There are elements of drama, family relationships. I mean, they have several layers. And I find that's also true for Almodovar in general, and for High Heels in particular, which is a melodrama. And you talked about the fact that you thought that was too limiting to talk about this film as a melodrama, because I think it's also a musical, and it's it's all of this at the same time. And perhaps this connects back to what I was saying about the fact that he's against purity. It's really about diversity and connecting various realities. And I wanted to hear what you thought about this idea of superposition of genres, of characters, and in your work and in his.
You know, it's when I published my first book, I had that question, which made me pause because, and it was the journalist asked me, you always wanted to write crime? And I look at him and say, no, I just had a story to tell. And I think that's what I see in Almodovar movies. He has a story to tell. And then he's going to be called as melodrama because you have that, well, that passion and everything that's happening between the mother and the daughter and the affair and everything. But it's a thriller because you have a murder at the start, and that murder has, I mean, such a big meaning, symbolism and linked to the end of the movie. But it's also a drama. That's what it is. And I think that, I think Almodovar is like this. He has a story to tell. And then because I think that is a human thing. Sometimes, I mean, it makes me laugh when I hear, oh, in Sweden, we like to categorize. In Norway, I like to categorize. We all do. This is what we do, because I think it's a question of feeling safer. When you can put a label on something, then then I know what it is. This is what we do, you know. It's like girl and boy. It's for everything. We like to put labels on. It's a human thing to do. And that's the thing that I realized with Almodovar. When we are going to see a movie, you say, "I'm going to see an Almodovar movie." What are you going to watch? I'm going to watch an Almodovar. And I think that is, that I think says it all, because it says that we cannot put him really in a genre. You can watch the movie you want. You can say, I'm going to watch a melodrama for Paul at High Heels. You can say, I can watch thriller. It's really the thriller. I mean, that movie, when you end up pair up, that's why, because I was a big reader, what gave me the love of reading, because my mother, I knew how to read quite early on, but I didn't like it. And my mother was a teacher, and it was an absolute drama in that family. The walls were covered with books. I mean, now we don't see it, but it's all around. I have books all around in my office. It's all the walls. You just have the two windows with it. And my mother gave me an Agatha Christie, The Mysterious Affair at Styles, because she had read by a teacher from Nice, who was also writing some essays, who had said that it was very well translated. So she bought me this one, and she said, maybe you're going to like it. There is a little investigation in it. And I fell completely in love with Hercule Poirot, the little gray cells, and London at that time, and because I was a big fan of history, but there was nothing that was really grabbing me, and that was the start. So then, I mean, I was going to a small bookshop in the town where I was living every Saturday, buying books at 50 cents and, you know, 1 franc, and I have a collection, which I still have, which are all secondhand Agatha Christie. And so I think that maybe why, when I saw High Heels, it was really that thing, thinking there is an investigation in there, and yet you have those characters, which is not like so caricatural, which even when you read, because I mean, Simenon and all this, but try to find that depth into characters or thrillers. I mean, at the same time, I mean, the 90s thrillers, well, the American thrillers that we all know, which are very big successes, but the characters were like caricatures one after the other. And then you have an Almodovar like this, and you say, wow, I don't know where to look. And I think that it's something that when I write, now I'm more conscious, because I know that my publisher expects something from me, and my readers expect something. So I know that my readers expect twists. So I know that I need to give it to them. But at the same time, I love finding those. So it's kind of a game that I like to play. But for sure, I'm dreaming of having the time, and I think it will be much later on, to write the story of my family. I mean, granddad, who was a war hero and yet a terrible father, and my parents who were in love, and it was at the start a tragic story. And there's so much to tell. My grandparents were living in so much poverty. And so I'm dreaming of doing this, but I cannot yet do it because there is an expectation for my publisher, for my readers. This is how I make my money. Is less glamorous than the Almodovar, you know. I would say freedom. But in all my stories, I mean, as I said, in all my stories, it's not all my crime. I have stories to tell. And what I love, and Almodovar does that a lot, and that's what I really love in his movies, is that all the characters are very important. And even if you have a character who just appears and it's just going to come to bring whatever to one character, this character will exist. And for me, when I write, I love this. If I have a character who's just going to open it's going to open my book, literally, it's going to be the first character, and it's not going to appear anymore after that. But God, I'm going to be with that character. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to know everything about him or her, everything. And I'm going to see him, and I'm going to see him move, and I'm going to know if he has children, even if we just see him fishing and just the bay down there. And I think Almodovar does this. He dreams a lot, and then that gives flesh around the bones. And that's why I think grows. It's crossing the genre, and it's because in the end, what you want to do is just tell a story, and then you're using the thriller, the melodrama, the drama. I mean, you don't really realize you're using that. You're just doing it because it serves your story, and that situation will serve your story. And then it will be labeled as, it's a thriller moment when the husband is killed. So it's, yes, but that, the purpose of that event is to talk about the characters. Because Almodovar movies are character-driven, more than plot-driven. It's all about what's happened. And for me, my characters are the most important thing. And how many times I can go back to series, not for the story, which I got... not as good as it was, and of course it's hard to write series and reinvent but because of characters, I'm drawn to the characters, and I want to know what's going to happen to them and how they're going to evolve, and because they get so fleshy at some point that you feel that they're part of your life. And that is a question that I've never seen asked to him, and I would ask him if he continues to live with, for example, those characters that he's created. Does he think about them? I mean, does he, you know, is he visited, or does he think, oh, what would that character do at that? Because even more for direct like this, you see your characters. They are there. They're interpreted by actors, but they are there. They exist. I mean, in the dimensions that in a book, it doesn't. It's still part of the imagination. And I think if a book is adapted, it's never what you've been created at the start. So now I'm in the process of adapting the last one. And I know that it's going to be an ocean between what I've written and what it's going to be. So, yeah.
And looking back today at Almodovar, because he's made many, many films since High Heels, how do you feel going back to High Heels? You told us a little bit about the context in which you first saw the film and how that first viewing was important. But today, do you have a different relationship to the film, or how do you feel it sits within his wider filmography?
I think I'm going to use a word that I don't want to use, but I'm going to use it anyway. I think it's almost the more mainstream in a way. Mm-hmm. I think it's the one that that you can show to more people without them wondering or feeling ill at ease, because that's what I've seen. Mm-hmm. When I share, you can have people really, you know, being in their seat and thinking that is weird, that doesn't sit with me, you know, very, it's a bit, so I think I have, it's you know, when you have a sort of a, it's almost like having a blind spot for that movie. For me, it was really what created my love for Almodovar. So it's almost as I cannot be objective. So I think I could see it again and again and again, and just think that it just, for me, Almodovar filmography is like, is a story of his life, and it evolves as, and I think when you create, that's what it is. When you look at your first work, you're like, oh my God, I'm in this. I mean, I could have done this like this, or, oh my God, that sentence is like Baudelaire, is like, I mean, seriously, it's so obvious that you, and I'm sure
it's not
that
so bad to say that a sentence of yours is like Baudelaire.
But when you copy, you know, and when you do, he was hilarious. I was at a festival, and we were with a colleague of mine. He became a very dear friend, and we were sitting together, and he took my first book, and he opened, and he was like, so in English, le ciel est bailour, the sky is gray and very low, and he was like, and he looked at me and said, damn, I know. He was like, copy of Baudelaire, you know, the spleen. And I was like, oh my God, this is awful. And I think at the start, you don't realize, you know, and I'm sure that when he sees this movie, and if I would look at it with not, because I think it's a little bit like if I would be in love, I don't manage that movie to see it with the journalist that I was, you know, with that eye that I can see the other movies and say, oh, that is a bit of a UFO in that filmography. I think I accept it as a path, you know. It's a little bit like Berman. When you see his movies, I mean, they're more, they're not as provocative, or but he's talking about subject in a very but violent way. Bergman, I find it, and I think he follows his path. Is as you evolved, as a, you know, it's a little bit, it's very obvious when you see Picasso and you see the different phases, and I think it's the same in the filmography, except that it's less obvious. So I think it would sit like that. But for me, I mean, you were talking about the fact that it was a musical as well. I mean, the you know, when I met R.J. Ellery, who became a great friend, we used to send each other books and music. And of course, why did I send him? I sent him some Cabrel, because I love Cabrel. But I sent him also the soundtrack, I mean, Pien San Mi, that song. Because it's absolutely divine, and every time for me, it makes me cry. I just feel in the interpretation of that woman, the way she sings, it just moves everything in you, and you don't have to understand the lyrics to feel that way. And that's what Roger told me at the time. He said, I don't understand Spanish, and yet I just felt completely, you know, So moved, and yes, it's a blind spot. It's almost, you know, like a mother who just sees her child. Oh, she's so beautiful, and he's so clever, he's so bright, you know? And you don't see that he's just making too much noise, and he's annoying everyone but you, you know. But it's a little bit like that with that movie. And and when I was reading, it was last night, I was reading about that the I think it was in America that he was, he was in the US, that he didn't do as well as the other, you know, movies. I was like, what, that's surprising, because it's more, the more melodramatic ones. So the American should like that more, you know. But I think that as he was less original, I think in his way of dealing with the themes that he normally deal with, like when you see Kika, you're thinking, well, or what is the title in English? This one, Mujeres, Las Crisis de Nervios, Women
on the Edge of a Nervous Breakdown.
Yes, Nervous Breakdown. That's the one. And that's what I like very much when they try to keep the title, you know, the most they can, because they wouldn't sit well, those titles normally, you know, in the different countries. And I'm very surprised because they really, really do. And he was saying that he was fresh. I mean, he was really insisting on this, you know, but after that you have the distributors, you have them. I mean, it's very complex. And yet he manages, you know, most of the time. So, yeah.
So your latest child is Lille de Jule, yes. Island. Can you tell us perhaps about the next one, about the one you're currently working?
Yeah, the one I'm so late writing about. Well, you know, I'm supposed to deliver it on the 1st of May, and I need to write it completely. I need to do a skeleton. So I'm gonna set it again, so here, but not on a little island, really on Lidingö. And it's the first time that I'm going to say out loud what it is about, because I'm just coming up with it. But I'm gonna talk about my main character. I have two main characters. I'm gonna have a former police woman, a former detective, detective inspector, who became a crime writer. A decade before the story happens, and she just lost an adult daughter who was 20 years old in a tragic car accident. And she's French, and her husband is Swedish, and she decides to, for a change of scenery, to come to Sweden in the house that her husband has in his kind of childhood summer home on Lidingö. And she goes to a party for the 200 years anniversary of a publisher, and she meets the kind of the owner, the family who bears the name of the publishing, the publisher, and the old lady. She asks her to look into. An affair, which is basically her grandson has been accused 20 years back, 23 years back, of rape and murder, but he's been claiming his innocence for all his life. And she's telling her, Maya, the main character, no one wants to look into it. Because he's been condemned, and he was the one who apparently committed the crime. But that young man committed suicide a few months before being released, and the granny is doubting his granny is doubting, so she's asking her to look into it. And as she starts looking into it, there are some young girls who are found dressed in Saint Lucia outfit, which is it's the celebration of Lucia, so in white with a red belt and the crown with the candles, exactly the way that this young girl had been found 20 years ago. So we go diving into that old case, but more than anything with that new investigation. And yes, in the winter in Sweden, and I'm going to tackle a subject that I cannot talk about, but that is very dear to me, and it will be in the book. So it has a very deep message, and that is going to be found as it goes along. Yeah.
Fantastic. We really look forward to reading that soon. And can you let us know about translation? Do you know the languages in which it will be translated now?
Well, I know for sure it's going to be English for sure. That I know. I have a few languages. I'm going to forget some, but I look in the books around. I'm Actually, the first one that is there, I'm doing really well in India, actually, in Malayalam, you know, in Kerala. I mean, they've been doing edition after edition. They're printing and reprinting many times, so it's doing really well. So after that, what do I have? Oh God, I have many. I have Chinese here in Taiwan. I have Polish. I have my God, cannot read the thing, but I have many. It's a Spanish. No, Spanish is not anymore. So that I need to work on it. Well, I need to work on it. My publishers need to work on it, and yes, I'm forgetting some. Italian, of course, Czech. So yeah, my God, many. Many is 20 and something languages, but for this one I don't know, but for sure in the English. That is for me is the great, great thing. We're not many in France having that luck of being translated in English. That is great. Yeah.
Wonderful. And we usually close the podcast by asking our guest if there's a question we haven't asked that we should have asked.
Oh my God, no, you've asked wonderful questions. You made me think a lot. I mean, it's and that is nice because it's normally Almodovar, our conversations I'm having with my mother or my parents, you know, or and very often just to myself. So now it was really, really, you raised a lot of a question and themes that's going to be with me for the writing of the next book. So it's really nice. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you very much. We really enjoyed having you as our guest too on the podcast. Thank you very much for having accepted to come and talk about your love of Almodovar.
Thank you, Joanna. Thank you so much. And we wish you very well for the book that's coming out soon.
Thank you so much. Pleasure was all mine. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to After Images. Please subscribe on your favorite podcast app and follow After Images Podcast on social media.